B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. There is a lot of NFL teams giving out extensions today. Some cash flowing around. Nick Bitonio, Denver Broncos, got a big old bag, and he is worth it, man. That dude can play. All right, we do it every year. It is time for us to make our official picks for the 2025 NFL season.
Let's get it, Jay.
Here's what we do. We go all the way around, all the divisions, and pick winners. It's okay. A simple game, man. You got to pick some winners.
Pick some winners.
All right, B, you want to start? You want me to start? What do you want to do?
Okay, I'm going to try and start.
Let's start with the AFC.
No damn standings available.
They're all 0-0, B.
I know, but still, I need to get all the teams.
I'll tell you. All right. Let's start in the AFC East. In the AFC East, you have the Bills, the Dolphins, the Patriots, and the Jets. In an effort to speed this up, is anybody not picking the Bills?
I'm going with the Bills.
White Brian?
I'm taking the Bills, too.
Okay. That one I don't think we needed to spend a lot of time on.
Yeah.
All right. AFC North. This one I don't think will be as simple. Ravens, Steelers, Bengals, Browns. B. Mitch.
Ravens.
B. Mitch picks the Ravens. Landfill.
Yeah, I think this one's pretty simple. I'm also taking the Ravens. I mean, it's certainly not going to be the Browns. And all the Bengals really have is Burrow and Chase. So I'm 100% going Ravens.
White Brian.
I'm going to trust Burrow and Chase. Bengals.
I mean, they're going to suck.
Oh, all right. I'm going to take the Ravens. I like the Bengals. I think they're a playoff team again. But so.
They won't stop nobody, but okay.
Their defense could be better.
They'd be better. That don't mean that they're going to be good. They were horrible last year.
If I was going to take anybody but the Ravens, it might be the Steelers. I don't necessarily think things are going to break right in Pittsburgh with Aaron Rodgers. But if they do, they have a good defense. Mike Tomlin tends to get the best out of his players. Like, I could see the Steelers being the surprise. Not enough that I'm taking them, but that would be where I go if it wasn't the Ravens. But I think the Ravens are just loaded. Keeping it going in the AFC South, Texans, Colts, Jags, Titans. The Jags were 4-13. The Titans were 3-14. Jags have a new coach. The Colts have Daniel Jones as their starting quarterback. Houston's won this thing at least two years in a row.
Houston.
B didn't even wait on that. Landy?
Yeah, I think I also got to go Houston here. I mean, I guess it's possible the Jags could make it interesting. It's certainly not going to be the Colts with Daniel Jones. That's going to be a disaster.
White Brian.
Jaguars.
I think White Brian like to lose.
part of me likes what White Brian's trying to do because we've gotten to a point where there's always turnover. And right now I think me, you, and Landfill just picked the same winner in all three of these divisions.
Mm-hmm. It's turnover in the NFC East, not in other divisions. The other divisions are consistent.
Well,
for the most part.
One team that has won it forever is the AFC West, the Kansas City Chiefs. Now that
I'm going with the Chiefs again.
The AFC West is loaded. You got the Chiefs, Chargers, Broncos, Raiders. Three of those four teams, the head coach has won Super Bowls. The fourth team, Jim Harbaugh, has been to a Super Bowl in the NFL.
Chiefs.
B, not even hesitating.
Andy Reid.
Do you think there's any the Chiefs have finally gotten too old, don't have enough weapons? Like, what will it take for you to stop believing in the Chiefs?
Pat Mahomes not playing.
Okay. Mr. Landini.
We always talk about the importance of a quarterback.
Yeah.
And that dude, you say what you want, he is still damn good. Might be weird, whole family, but he's good in football.
I don't think he's weird. I think the rest of them are weird.
He's a little weird, too. But his other people are outlandishly weird.
I'm also going with the Chiefs. I don't really understand why people have this faith in Justin Herbert the way that they do. And I really didn't think Bo Nix was nearly as impressive as other people did last year. So the Chiefs, that's an easy one for me.
I, too, will take the Chiefs. I'm not saying they win the Super Bowl, but like to win that division, the division is good. If I was going to take anybody besides the Chiefs, it would probably be the Broncos.
Tippy, why you say we're going to save time and then you do all that extra talk?
Well, B, we're on our fourth division and we're only 7 minutes into the segment. Hey, now we're killing time.
We're going to be fine. We're going to be fine.
White Brian, who you got?
I can't go against Mahomes, Chiefs.
Okay.
Wow, he finally got smart.
What's going to be really interesting is when Jeff realizes we made our picks, how he then will try to, like, email us in his picks.
So!
All right. In the AFC, we all pretty much picked chalk. Everybody took the Bills. In the AFC North, we had three picks with the Ravens, me, B, and Professor Mulligatawny. White Brian took the Bengals. In the AFC South, me, B, and Mullins took the Texans. White Brian took the Jaguars. And in the AFC West, we all took the Chiefs. All right. We'll switch it over to the National Football Conference now. Let's start with the NFC South. Tampa's won this thing, I think, every year since Brady won that Super Bowl, mm-hmm. maybe even more. You got the Bucs, the Falcons, the Panthers, or the Saints. Mr. Mitchell.
Bucs.
Okay, Tampa.
But if I were to pick something, no, I'm joking.
See, I'm interested.
No, I'm messing with you.
Like, who do you think could make a run at them?
Falcons.
I kind of like the Panthers. I'm just a Bryce Young truther.
Well, you're trying to make that thing become what you thought it was
trying to
a
make
couple
fetch
years
happen.
Ago, and you still hadn't made it, bro.
He played really well in the second half last year, but you're correct. Mm-hmm. I also like Dave Canales.
Season 17 games.
I like Dave Canales a lot. I think he's a really good, smart, young coach. Landfill, NFC South.
I'm going with the Falcons. I liked Michael Penix last year. I'm not really a Baker Mayfield believer. The Saints are a complete disaster. And I just think that David Tepper will find a way to screw up the Panthers.
Okay. White Brian.
The Panthers play in Tampa Bay on the last game of the season. That's going to decide the division, but the Bucs are going to win because they're home.
I like that.
You really believe the Panthers are going to be that good? Right, Brian?
They looked really good at the end of last year.
They were feisty, dog.
Yeah, because nobody else gave them a chance. Nobody cared about them because they were just saying, oh, we're playing the Panthers.
The Falcons had to win that last game to try to get in, and they got blown out.
Yeah. Huh? I'm also going to take Tampa. I am a Baker believer. I think Todd Bowles is really good. They added Abuka. I like what they do defensively. I think Tampa's underrated, man, honestly. All right, sticking in the NFC now, let's go to the NFC North. This joint is wide open, man. You got the Lions, lost their coordinators, but, you know, should be healthier. The Vikings go from Sam Darnold to J.J. McCarthy. The Bears have excitement in Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams. The Packers should be as good, maybe better. Where do you go, NFC North, B?
Packers. That move from Micah Parsons makes me move to the Packers instead of the Lions, and I believe if Micah Parsons can adjust to that cold weather, when he's coming off the edge and it's cold out there, oh, the quarterback's not going to want to deal with him.
Professor Mulligatawny.
I'm also taking the Packers.
They're good. White Brian.
I think the Packers are really good, but the Lions just, they have so much talent.
So you going Lions?
Yeah, I'm taking the Lions.
All right. I'm going with the Packers, too. I think the Lions are still a playoff team. Of all the teams you don't buy in the North, for me, it's the Bears. I feel like there's always excitement about the Bears. Chicago's a really big city. They love the Bears. And I just, if the Bears finish the season 7-10, would you be the slightest bit surprised?
I wouldn't be. But, like the thing for me, I know you give KOC a lot of credit. And I know Landfill hates Darnold. But Darnold played spectacular early on last year.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if McCarthy has that type of arm to do what he did last year, even though he's not very good. But I think McCarthy is more of that mid-range type guy.
See, I think McCarthy, to me, Darnold has the arm. I mean, Darnold's a USC quarterback, top five pick, has all the athletic all everything you look for, you see it with him, right? And I think Moneyball, the actual book, if you've read it, tried to identify, like, a lot of times can't miss prospects miss because you get so sucked into all the stuff. Like, damn, look at his arm. Look at the strength. Look at the size. McCarthy has all that. Like, McCarthy was a big deal recruit. He's big. He's strong. But I think McCarthy has the intangible stuff, like just the guttiness, the leadership that Darnold, I think at this point we all know, doesn't have. I just think it might be too much too fast for McCarthy.
Especially coming back from the injury. Looking at their two receivers who are big play threats. They don't care how much a leader is. Can you throw the damn ball 70 yards down the field, 65 yards down the field, hit me in stride so I can run into the end zone? That's what they care about.
Yeah.
And Addison may not be there for a minute, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, they traded for Thielen. So far in the NFC, me, White Brian, and B took the Bucks. Lamphill took the Atlanta Falcons. ATL, shorty, don't disrespect it.
Hotlanta.
Hotlanta. In the NFC North, me, B, and Mullins took the Packers. White Brian took the Lions. Let's go to the NFC West. Pretty interesting division out there. I think the Rams were probably a significant favorite here until Matt Stafford broke his back, and there's just a ton of uncertainty there. You've also got the Seahawks that won 10 games last year. They missed the playoffs, but they won 10 games. The Cardinals and then the Niners, a team that people really believe in the talent and the coaching, even though last year they went 6-11. B, where are you going in the NFC West?
I'm going to take the Cardinals. No, I'm joking. Give me the Seattle Seahawks.
Okay, why?
I just think that defense does more than what people think, even in this day and age. And when you can go out there and you can limit people from doing what they want to do, it gives you a chance to win. And I believe that you know, the looking at a back with us, Stafford, we come with all the injuries on San Francisco 49ers. And I don't think Colin Murray ever arrived. So I believe that defense of Seattle is going to help them out. I'm thinking it's going to have to be a defense-led thing. I'm not saying Sam Darnold is going to do much to help them out.
So. They run the ball well, too. Yeah. Mullins, who you got?
Yeah, I have zero belief in Seattle because of their quarterback situation. I just think Matt Stafford, this whole lingering back thing, it's just weird to me. When you start getting to an advanced age and you start having back problems, like, they don't really get better. I just don't have any confidence there that he's going to be playing quarterback for him throughout the year. So I'm going to actually go with San Francisco. I know they had they struggled a lot last year. It is entirely possible that Adam Peters was the secret to their success all along, and that we took their soul when we hired him. But I guess we'll find out this year.
We will find out. White Brian, who you got out west?
I'm not worried about the back injury. The Rams are going to win the division.
All right. Me and White Brian agree on one. Sean McVay.
Yeah, both try to swim when the water's rough.
Sean McVay is the best coach in the division.
One almost didn't make it to a pole and got slammed to the bottom of the ocean.
That's also true. I think we sleep on Devontae Adams out there. I think a rejuvenated Devontae Adams playing with Puka Nacua. I think Stafford's going to be okay. I love the young defense they've started to build.
Did he even practice this year? Now I understand if we were saying, oh, he just didn't play in the game. He didn't really practice.
I think he ended up practicing some, but you're not too far off.
Mm-hmm.
I love that young pass rush guy, Fisk. That dude is lightning off the edge. I like Jared Verse is really, really good. I think L.A. realized they got old in a hurry after the Super Bowl and are trying to fix that. Now, unfortunately, your quarterback's also really old, so we'll see how it goes. All right, B. Mitch, your AFC title game.
You missed the East.
I did. And that one might matter, huh?
Yeah.
All right, who you got?
I'm going to go with the Commanders.
Commanders for B. Mitch. Is there any homerness, or you really think they get it done?
I think they get it done, and I'm going with the fact that they have not had a repeat title holder since 2004, and I don't think Dallas or the Giants have a chance in hell. And White Brian, you can go in and pick the Giants, please.
Landfill.
Put that bad luck on nobody else.
NFC East.
Yeah, I'm
Fortunately.
Hater.
I don't think picking the Eagles is being a hater.
It is, because he's a Giants fan.
Which probably makes it worse.
And the Giants and the Eagles don't get along. He's been a hater.
I'm taking the Commanders. I think Philly, dude, week five last year, they were trying to run their coach, and he brought his son to the podium as a human shield. Like, that just happened. We didn't invent that. That was less than a calendar year ago. That's a volatile situation in South Philadelphia. A.J. Brown reading books, like, they just it's hard to stay on top of the mountain, man. All right.
It is.
Now, B, your AFC title game.
AFC title game is going to be Kansas City and the Baltimore Ravens.
Landfill?
I would like to pick something other than the Ravens and the Chiefs, but it's just going to be the Ravens and the Chiefs.
Landfill, you sitting by me in class looking over my shoulder.
I mean, the Chiefs are – obviously it's going to be the Chiefs. They've been in the championship game every year for like the last 8 years, and then it really just comes down to whether you believe more in the Ravens or the Bills. And
yeah.
I'm going with the Ravens this year.
White Brian, AFC title game.
I believe a little more in the Bills, Kansas City and the Bills.
All right, I'm zagging here.
Please. Zag, we win.
I don't think the Ravens or the Chiefs get to the title game. I think it's a little changing of the guard. I got Bills, Bengals in the AFC title game. If Joe Burrow's right, he's shown.
Joe Burrow was right last year. His defense sucks.
I hear you. I just think they could get red hot late. I think a lot of times you see a wild card team get red hot late in the year. And I'm gonna take the Bengals there.
That's your old WT. I got it.
WT.
Wishful thinking.
I don't think it's. I have the Ravens winning the division.
Bruh. Okay. Until that defense stop giving up 28, 30 points, Joe Burrow ain't gonna be hot enough.
I mean that.
And if he keep scrambling around like he did in the preseason game, he ain't gonna make it through the whole season.
I mean, the Bills beat the Ravens last year in the playoffs, so yeah. I don't think taking the Bills to get there is crazy. It's just having the Chiefs lose is the crazy part.
I'm
to
with
me.
You.
NFC title game, Mr. Mitchell.
NFC title game. All right, I'm going to the Detroit Lions.
That'd be juicy.
Nope. Check.
Ooh, check.
Check. It's going to be against the Green Bay Packers.
Oh.
But the Green Bay Packers are going to have to come here.
Oh. All right.
That's called WT also.
Landfill.
Yeah, so just for the record, I want to point out that 30 seconds ago, I said that my game was going to be Packers – Commanders, and that Brian was going to steal it from me. I knew this before you said it. That's the most obvious pick. The Packers are good, so are the Commanders. Week two rematch for the championship game. Hopefully the Commanders win.
You're sitting behind me in class. Looking
you
at
stole
my,
from me. B, I had that one.
You looking over my shoulder. I'm not behind you.
I had that one. That's me.
Oh, Lord.
White Brian.
I also have the Packers in there, but I have the Rams against the
Packers.
Yo,
White Brian stealing my stuff. I, too, have Rams-Packers for my NFC title game. All right, Super Bowl picks with a winner.
I had the Chiefs and the Ravens, didn't I not?
You had Chiefs.
Baltimore Orioles. Incredibly, unbelievably, 30 years ago, Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's record for most consecutive games played, and we are honored to have Cal join us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline. Cal, what's up, man? Thank you for making time for us.
You're quite welcome. Can you believe it's 30 years ago?
Oh, long time, man.
Can you?
No. I mean, it's kind of weird. When I think about it, sometimes it feels like it's yesterday. The memory is really crystal clear. I saw it from my perspective, and it just seems like it happened moments ago. And then other times I sit here and think, man, that was another lifetime ago. I was a baseball player. I played 20 years, and that happened to me during my career. So it goes either way, but it's certainly how great it was and what a good feeling it was. That's front in mind, sharing it with my mom, my dad, my kids. Mm. It was a spectacular night.
I got to go to 21, 29, and that was a really big deal for me as a kid. I grew up a huge O's fan, and I remember the numbers up on the warehouse wall. They would come down, in between the innings there, every game. It was all just so special. What, if anything, do you remember most from that game? Like the lap you did, all of it was just such a wild night.
Yeah, you bring the numbers on the warehouse. The first time they did that, I think it was like 2 weeks before. It was kind of build up. I wish I remember the number. It caught me by surprise. They played the John Tesh music, and the game becomes official at 4.5 if you're winning, 5 if you're losing. And then, so it's right in the middle of the game, and I was thinking, what is that? What's going on? What are we doing? And then I see the number drop, and then I kind of get it. And, then it kind of it brings you along in anticipation that it's going to happen like in 21-31. So every time that song played when we were home and they changed the number on the warehouse, it made me start to reflect on who was important in my life. You kind of go backwards. And it was kind of emotional.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who came up with that thought or idea, but it really prepared the fans, the audience, and all of us, for that moment on 21-31 when it did drop and it became official. What it didn't prepare us for was how long that celebration was going to last in the middle of the game, and it ended with. When Rafael Palmeiro and Bobby Bowe pushed me down the line to take a lap around that park. I remember thinking, man, we got to get this game going. It's like a rain delay. The pitchers are going to get cold and, we're going to lose it. And when I started that lap around, probably about 3 or 4 handshakes in, I was thinking, I could care less if this game ever starts again. It was that good.
I remember watching it on TV, and it was just, especially the lap, was just so epic, and it just seemed like the whole world was focused on Camden Yards in that moment and celebrating you and your career and the longevity. If you want to relive it, this Saturday, September 6th, the Dodgers with Shohei in town. There's going to be a pregame ceremony before the Orioles take on the Dodgers. The ceremony is at 6:25 p.m. Gates open at 5. You can get tickets at Orioles.com. And so you're not going to jog around the field this time. You're rolling around in a convertible. Is that right?
Well, I rolled around in a convertible before. The story there is it was a red Corvette. A lot of people think that was a gift to me, but it wasn't. I ended up getting a Chevy Tahoe as a gift, and I was wondering, how come I didn't push harder for that Corvette? The Corvette that took me around, I think it was in my last game. But anyway, it's the same Corvette, the same owner of the Corvette there. So that's a little nostalgic in a way. But I'll go around the park, and I have I have the responsibility of making a few remarks. And I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to say yet, but I'm working on it.
But do you ever sit down and just think about that whole feat, Cal? Like, I really accomplished this? Because I know when people start playing the game, you're not thinking about how many games you're going to play. And then you go and you play that many consecutive games.
No, I mean, if you were to ask me when I was younger, when I first broke into the big leagues, I think I would have rather had more home runs than Hank Aaron. I'd rather have more hits than Pete Rose. Those were kind of goals that you were trying to figure out. Were you good enough to kind of, amass any sort of numbers in the game? I would never said that I was, going to have a consecutive game streak, or I was going to break Lou Gehrig's record. That just kind of happened because
I played. I wanted to get better. The managers kept writing my name in the lineup. And before you knew it, it was almost 1,000 games that showed up. And then I think that's when the streak became born, when because the National League record was a little over 1,000 games, and it started to get some sort of attention. And I would say that there was quite a bit of negative attention from about 1,200 to about 1,500. You know, every time we went into a rebuilding mode, or every time I went into a slump, which, you know, happened quite a bit, they would say that I needed to take a day off, and that, you know, that I was being selfish or something. And right after 1,500, it seemed like all my critics turned into the biggest advocates. They were saying that I had to break the record for the sake of the game of baseball and all kinds of stuff. But to me, it was all the same. I showed up every single day to play, and I was resilient. I found out early on in my career that I could play less than 100%, because sometimes I think some players, you know, don't know if they can, compete at that level, not being 100%. But I found that I could. And so then it was just a matter of coming out and being ready to play each and every day. And the streak just took care of itself.
Don't you think that's something that most players in every sport need to realize, that you don't have to be 100% to go play?
Well, I mean, there is something called experience that as you age, yep. You know, as your talent kind of goes down, your experience takes over. It's not shortcuts, but you understand how things work a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had a couple of injuries really early in my career. I remember one where I hyperextended my elbow, avoiding a tag at second base on a double. So then I caught the bag and my elbow hyperextended in. And I remember thinking, man, you know, that hurts, but it's okay in the field. But when I picked up a bat and started to swing it, it hurt quite a bit. And so I took it up to the plate, swung at a bad pitch in the dirt on the first pitch, and winced in pain. And then I calmed myself down and got a better pitch to hit, you know, a fastball that was over the plate. I waited a little too long on it, put a short swing on it, and hit a bullet at the second baseman. And as I was running to first base, I realized when you swing and miss, it hurts like hell. When you make contact, it doesn't hurt at all. And awesome. I tell you what, I got hotter, you know, home runs, doubles, home runs. Driving in runs, hit for a high average. And I kept thinking, you know, every time you have a little bit of an injury, there's a silver lining in there somewhere. And I went looking for it.
That's awesome. Right. Talking with Cal Ripken here on the Rude Guest Hotline, the Iron Man of baseball. This Saturday marks the 30th anniversary of Cal getting to 21-31, breaking Lou Gehrig's record. It sounds like it's going to be an awesome day of baseball at Camden Yards. Harold Baines is going to be there, Eddie Murray, Mike Messina, Jim Palmer, Rafi Palmeiro, BJ Surhoff, Brady Anderson. John Miller is going to be back. I mean, John Miller was the voice of so many summer evenings of my life as a kid. I'm curious, Cal, like, obviously you've done these, right? Like, you were there the night it happened, and then there's a 10-year anniversary, a 20-year anniversary. Going into this 30th year, knowing all these guys that are making the time and the commitment to come see you, will it get emotional for you, or is it just fun at this point?
Well, I mean, it feels a lot more like fun right now. Sure, when I think about my dad, you know, and even some of the comments that I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to say, I'm sure I'll mention my dad and my mom, and it'll hit me at that moment, if I could just hit me now, but. So, yeah, you'll have flashes of emotion. But I think, you know, the anniversaries are anniversaries. And, you know, I'd never want to make a big deal out of anniversaries or even reunions when you're in high school and all that. But I think this time around, I just turned 65, and you have a little bit different perspective on life at the time. Mm-hmm. And then you enjoy looking back and kind of remembering, you know, some of the highlights of your life and your career and the people that you spent doing it. And I think, as you mentioned those names, you know, a lot of people, you know, were a part of that, and they were there right along with it. We all experienced it together. You know, I've had some conversations. I think the Orioles have a couple surprises, so they say. You know, I said that I think that I heard that Bo and Rafi were rumored to come back and maybe recreate the lap around the
that's
ballpark
awesome.
Without me running a lap.
That's awesome.
But just remembering that and sharing those experiences are pretty cool. So, yeah, maybe I'm softening in my older age, where you look back and you're thankful for the for those memories, and this is a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, Saturday is going to be a special day at Camden Yards. Pregame ceremony at 6:25. First pitch at 7:05. Dodgers are in town. It's already a juicy game. Raffy's on the press release, so Palmeiro at least will be there. I can't speak for Bobby Bonilla. And this is crazy. Somebody just pointed this out to me. Saturday's the 30th anniversary of 21-31. Do you know what it's the 29th anniversary of?
Of course I do. Eddie Murray hit his 500th home run September 6, 1996.
Yeah. Wow. How crazy. And I mean, two huge days in Orioles history on the same day.
It's awesome. And so Eddie and I, in the past so many September 6th, you know, I'll text him and say happy anniversary, and he'll text me back. So we share that date. You know, at first he said that, of course, I have to do it on September 6th, you know, and have it be overshadowed by your game. And I go, no, it's not overshadowed. We all enjoyed that home run just as much as you did hitting it.
That's so cool. Cal, congratulations. Last thing for me. You played for all the logos. Do you prefer, like, the cartoon bird or, like, the actual drawing of the bird?
When I first came up, it was the all cartoon bird. And I remember, Brooksy, when I was, watching him growing up, I always liked the old-time bird. And but I think it's really cool that you can switch and go back and forth. You know, Brady Anderson and I talk about this sometimes. Most people are jealous that the game has gone big and the salaries continue to rise, and everybody says, God, I wish I played in this era. But Brady and I talk about, well, God, the uniforms are so much better. And some of the things that you had to wear every single day, or the bats. You know, look at how well made the bats are. How many different kinds of bats, or the science of the bat, and just all the things that go with the game. We're thinking, man, we love to play with all that, and we don't really think about the salary part of the game. But it's fun. It's fun to think about those kind of things. I didn't play when there was wool uniforms, where. They weigh about 10 pounds by the time you finish the Sunday afternoon game. But, you know, our uniforms weren't as comfortable and weren't nearly as nice as they are now.
That's awesome. Cal, thank you for the time.
Appreciate you, Cal. Everybody
go up to Camden Yards Saturday night. Should be a really, really special night. All sorts of different experiences and special memorabilia will be really cool. Congratulations, man. Thanks for making time.
Thanks. The 21-29 game, I forgot to tell you this or whatever else. You witnessed that one.
Yeah.
I hit three home runs, one in 21-29, one in 21-31, 21-31. And Mike Messina gave me the batting tip in 21-29. It was against Jim Abbott. He said, you're getting out in front. Why don't you put a little flex in your stance a little bit, bend your knees, and see what happens. And I hit a home run to right center field, and that kind of catapulted me into 21-30 and 21-31. So that was Mike Messina gave me the batting tip.
That's so cool. What a cool
good stuff,
story.
Man. Great stories.
Cal, thank you for the time, sincerely.
Well, you're quite welcome.
Appreciate you, brother.
See you there Saturday.
All right. The legendary Cal Ripken Jr. joining us Saturday at Camden Yards will be a very, very special game. If I don't have 8 kids soccer games, maybe I'll try to sneak up to the yard for that one. What a day that'll
be. You should be let off for that one,
though. That is really, really cool. That's
a good thing. That's a good excuse.
Yeah, that's a highlight for me, man. Cal Ripken is an absolute hero. You know what else is here? Football. That's right. It's football season. If you decide to get in on the action this season, the American Gaming Association wants to remind listeners to have a game plan when it comes to betting. Bet with legal sports books only. Know the odds. Stick to a budget. And lastly, keep your cool. The result of a bet is never an occasion to criticize an athlete or a coach online. Please go to haveagameplan.org to learn more. That's brought to you by 106.7 The Fan's proud, responsible gaming partner, the American Gaming Association.
I'm Earl Forsey. We're sponsored by Cars for Kids, Cars with a K. It is game week in D.C., folks. We only have about five more days to listen to delusional Giants fans as the Commanders getting set to kick off and kick ass Sunday against the Giants. 1 p.m. Washington, a 5.5-point favorite. Oh, by the way, reminder, countdown to kickoff gets you started, as we always do, Washington game days here, 9 a.m., the airtime for countdown to kickoff for week one Sunday here on The Fan. Also, free agent wide receiver Kendrick Bourne is in town today. He's meeting with the Commanders today out in Ashburn. Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, says there's a framework for a deal already in the place in case those two sides want to get something done. College football, Bill Belichick's debut was a big bust last night. North Carolina clobbered by TCU 48-14. Baseball, Nationals snapped their 8-game losing streak on Monday with a 2-0 win over Miami rookie Andrew Alvarez, becoming only the second Nat starter since Steven Strasburg in 2010 to win his major league debut. 106.7 The Fan congratulates Cars for Kids at 30 years of turning car donations into supporting children. Cars for Kids has helped more than 100,000 kids nationwide. You can donate your used car today at carsforkids.org and join over a million proud donors, making a real difference. From the Crop Metcalf 5-Star Sports Desk, I'm Earl Forsey on The Fan.
Hey. B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. In about a half hour, our boy Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News will join us.
Patrick.
Tell us all things going on with the New York Football Giants. It's week one, dude. There's an NFL game in
2 days.
Yeah, like 40 hours?
Thursday night.
Yeah. I can't wait. We're going to be at MGM, I think. That should be a lot of fun. If you're hanging, come see us at MGM.
Mm-hmm.
It might be an Uber situation for your boy.
Mm-hmm.
Simple question. ESPN looked at all 32 NFL teams to identify the X factor for each team. For the New York Giants, they identified their X factor, a guy that White Bryant's really high on. The cornerback, Paulson Adebo. I'm reading now from ESPN. The Giants are going to pressure the quarterback. With a defensive line room of Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau, and Abdul Carter, you'd have to try not to. But we know pressure is not enough for a defense to succeed as quarterbacks get rid of the ball faster than ever before. Young man by the name of Daniels gets rid of that thing pretty quick.
Very quick.
I added that parenthetically. The Giants quarterback struggled last season. 2023 first-round pick Deontay Banks has flashed, but he failed to put together consistent weeks of strong coverage. In 2024, rookie slot Drew Phillips excels as a tackler and a blitzer, but can struggle to produce on the football. They need Adebo, whom they paid in free agency despite a major leg injury, to step up as a CB1. They can hide Banks from the toughest matchups and get safety help his way. They can get Phillips up into the line of scrimmage, pressing across the board and buying time for that pass rush to arrive. The past 1.5 seasons of Adebo were CB1 caliber. 7 picks and 28 passes defense for only 2 touchdowns surrendered. But he must be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Health is wealth, dog.
100%.
What was the Adebo injury? I mean, that's a young guy. He just got paid in his first, his rookie contract just expired. He got paid by the Giants off his work as a rookie with the Saints.
Okay.
I think he broke his leg.
Mm.
Is the femur the big one? The thigh muscle? The thigh bone? Is that the femur?
Yeah.
He broke his femur. I just Googled it.
That's a tough one to break.
Bro, that's the biggest bone in your body.
That's a tough one to break right there.
Now then
when you come back from it, do you completely come back?
The one injury I have never seen a player return from, and this has happened with multiple defensive linemen in my time covering the Washington. When you tear your quad,
yeah.
You're cooked.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, like, think about how important your quad muscle is outside of like your back and your spine.
Yeah.
I can't think of. So the femur is the bone the quad is attached to. That's a big injury. And it happened in mid to late October.
So will he be 100%?
That's a good question for Pat Leonard. I'm jotting that down because I got pens. Adebo health. Bang. We're going to ask Pat that at noon. So ESPN says Adebo is the X factor for the Giants. Who would you say, B, is the X factor for Washington?
In the defensive backfield you're talking about?
No, the whole team.
The X factor is number five.
He's pretty good.
I mean, the thing about, for me, Jaden is the X factor because if he continues cooking like he was at any, just even close to that, it gives us a chance. But if you want to go with somebody specifically other than him, I believe it's not a person, it's a thing. Having a running game on this football team changes the whole world. If they have a running game and you still can utilize Jaden as you did last year, time of possession worked for them. And because they will have the ball 10 minutes, 8 minutes, 15 minutes, and have a damn ball touchdown drives at the end. The other team comes on the field, and I don't care a damn who your offensive coordinator is. If a team keeps the ball 7, 8, 9 minutes or more, and they go down and they score a touchdown, it's hard as hell to stay patient. Now you start letting it go. And then you put – what you do for a team is you go away from your game plan where you try to establish a run, and then you start doing multiple things off of it, which is the easiest way to win games.
Sure.
You become a pass-happy team. And now you allow that other team to be a one-dimensional team and go after you, and it works in your favor. Because if they know, if I don't score and they get it back and, hell, Jaden goes 7, get a touchdown, go 8 minutes, get a touchdown, you are in dire straits at that point.
ESPN says Debo Samuel is the Commander's X factor. I'm reading now.
He can be a big plus.
Samuel was already an intriguing player when the Commanders traded for him. A wide receiver barely ever used down the field, best creating after the catch and beyond his athletic prime. But perhaps with some seasons left in the tank. As things have developed further, the recently resolved training camp holdout from Terry McLaurin, Samuel has become even more important. The Commanders expect to spread and shred the field again. So Samuel figures to consistently get 6 or 7 touches a game as a backfield option or receiver on quick run pass options. Mm-hmm. They need him to be dynamic. And while he wasn't the same player last season as he was prior to that, he is still above average. Samuel was 12th among all skill position players in yards after the catch over expectation per NFL Next Gen stats. Austin Eckler was 8th on that list. Mm-hmm. If Samuel doesn't bring the juice, the Commanders' options to replace his unique role are understandably thin. I don't disagree with that. But my X factor for the Commanders last year, 5th in the NFL in scoring, 7th in yards gained. They outscored their opponents. I mean, on the season, I want to say they were like almost plus 100 in point differential. It was probably plus 90.
Say your mama. Your mama, too.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Spirited conversation this morning. Football's back, baby. We are fired up. We're excited to talk a little college football, too. Terps football off and running. Good win last week to open the season. They beat Florida Atlantic. They got a big game tomorrow night against Northern Illinois, and folks are excited about the Terps.
Northern Illinois, they like, well, I don't know if they got the same coach, but they used to run that option, boy.
I mean, you know, the Huskies, Northern Illinois Huskies, had a big win last year. They took down Notre Dame.
We played them when I was in college.
Was it the same division or what?
No, they came down to us once. We went up to them. Boy, it was so damn cold up there. Oh, my Lord. When they came down to Louisiana, they ran into a buzzsaw, dog.
Took them down?
4 touchdows.
There you go.
200-plus yards rushing.
Northern Illinois coach is Thomas Hammack.
Hammack.
He was there last year when they took down Notre Dame. Hammack has led Northern Illinois to 2 bowl wins in 7 seasons as the head coach and is already tied in 7 years, tied for the 3rd most career wins
Northern Illinois is a good team, man. That MAC conference is tough. We are very excited to welcome in our friend Mike Loxley to the program. Coach, how are you?
What up, Mike?
JP, B. Mitch, what's up, fellas?
Man, we good, brother. How you feeling?
You know, day before game, man, trying to dot I's, cross T's, and keep us healthy.
I believe it. Coach, you know, I got to meet Malik. You and I were there together last year at the Annapolis Touchdown Club dinner, and I was really struck by Malik's balance of, I mean, truly his size stood out to me for a young man that's hadn't even played college football yet. But just his poise and calm demeanor, obviously had a tremendous opener last week as a true freshman to come out and throw three touchdowns. What'd you think of your young quarterback, Malik Washington, last week?
Yeah, no, everything you said, JP, is about spot on. You know, the thing that I've always said about Malik, and I've known, you know, this kid since eighth grade youth football with the Maryland Heat program, and really targeted him as the guy that I felt could be the guy that elevates our program and puts us in a position to compete for championships, which is the goal. His maturity, man, and it just shows up, and you can tell, you know, he started a little slow and didn't get some help from his teammates with a few drops, but he also missed a couple of things himself. But that maturity that he shows and the moxie, when he walks in, he kind of has that presence that the great ones have, and I've been around some, but it's just one game on his resume, and as we all know, it's the consistency of being able to do it week in and week out. And that's what I'm excited to see him do to build upon that game from last week. I'm really excited to see what he can do here tomorrow and build on it.
What's the one thing, Coach, you want him to improve upon and also the team as they go into the second week?
I think for Malik, the big thing for him is, you know, managing the clock. A couple times we got down really low on the play clock, and, you know, we're huddling now. We've got the pro-style system that Pep Hamilton has added to our system. I'd like to see it just – we got to get a few more plays. And to me, that's the quarterback is kind of the gas pedal of the offense in that, you know, getting the big guys to get up to the line of scrimmage and getting to the rhythm of how we got to move the ball to get more plays. And then, you know, for us as a team, the run game for me stood out. We, you know, the compliment to a young, inexperienced quarterback is the ability to run the football and the work we put into the run game, the O-line development. We got two really strong backs in DeJuan Williams and Nolan Ray. I like to see us be able to be a little more productive in the run game and find ways to take some pressure, because I can tell you we didn't go into the game expecting to throw it 43 times with a freshman quarterback.
Last week I thought your defense played pretty well, especially generating turnovers. What is the task this week? Probably a step up in competition with Northern Illinois coming to town. I mean, everybody remembers when they beat Notre Dame last year. What do you want to see from your D this week?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing there is, I mean, you think back to the first drive where we had six penalties on defense, and most of them were what I call non-competitive penalties. You know, we've got two dynamic young pass rushers in Zaire Mathis and Sidney Stewart, who both were day one starters for us, and you know, always talk about mistakes are progress in disguise, and especially if you get the lesson from the mistakes. And that's where, when I've talked about us making the jump that you typically make from game one to game two, it's we finally have some things on tape that we can make corrections with, especially with an inexperienced team. I mean, we got 64 guys that played their first game as a Terp in the Shell last week. And so being able to get the tape watched, evaluated on defense, you know, those non-competitive penalties that we had a couple of what I call the undisciplined variety, where we had the face mask, we had the late hit on the quarterback. Those are the two types of penalties that kind of get under your skin as a coach. So what I like to see us do on defense is continue to improve upon. And we had eight total penalties in the first quarter. And so we improved as the game went along, but I know that we won't beat good teams if we continue to have the self-inflicted wounds. So cleaning up those things will be key.
And as you go forward, I mean, how excited are you for this team? I know last year you know, you guys, it wasn't the season you wanted coming off the bowl success, beating Auburn in Nashville, which I still think is under talked about, to go down to SEC country and beat an SEC team.
I love it. White Brian don't like it.
White Brian does not like it. But Lox, you've talked about having to kind of relearn how to run a college team in the era of the transfer portal and the NIL. How much different does this year feel compared to last year?
Man, it's so much different for me, JP. You know, a year ago, I was in what I called the forest, to where I couldn't see the trees. I took over play calling. I was coaching the quarterbacks. I was trying to raise money, NIL money, for my program myself. Got caught up doing probably too much. And what I've done now is reinvented putting myself back in that locker room and, you know, having dinner with my players and being able to know kind of what's going on with this team. Because a year ago, we had the entitlement, we had the selfishness, and I mean, you guys know that in football, the it's we over me, and we've gotten back to that. We've got a young team, we've got, like I said, new guys, inexperienced guys that haven't played around here, and so what I've done is invested in the locker room and invested in the kids that we brought in, and we brought in some talented players. But now it's a matter of keeping their minds on team goals, not the individual goals, not the transactional things that a year ago was more about business of football. Now it needs to be about football business, and I've seen that out of this group, and I'm excited. But we really won't know who we are till we face some adversity together, and from the work that these guys have put in, I'm looking forward to seeing how they respond when we face some.
You've known a lot of these guys when you recruit them and things like that. And, you know, like, I know the times are different today, but I have always felt if a coach start off with a certain level of discipline and show the players that you care, you can get them to do whatever you want. Is this still like that?
It is 100% like that, B. Mitch. You know, a year ago, and this is the part that, you know, people don't realize, but for 110 years, every kid's scholarship check was the same. And then last year, things started changing, and I had to teach an 18-year-old how not to worry about what little Billy has going on over in his house and to run their own race. And these are things that, as a parent, you have to teach, train, and, you know, I always talk about, you know, teaching guys how to fish instead of giving them the fish sandwich, which the money is the fish sandwich, but teaching them what comes along with these things, the responsibilities that come when you get paid. There's going to be expectations and people expect things, or how you don't worry about what other people have. You only can worry about what you have. And these are things that I didn't anticipate as a parent slash coach a year ago. And it came back to hurt us in a locker room when we faced adversity. I had a split locker room because I had haves and have nots. And I've talked enough about that from last year, but I can tell you this team is so different. They understand right now it's about football business, and that the only thing they can do to create value is to go out, play well, develop themselves as players, and everything else kind of takes care of itself. So that's where a lot of the energy has been. I really like this team because we're young and inexperienced, and we don't know what we don't know. And that, for that reason, these guys will go out and they play hard, and they know we care about them around here.
Yeah. Talking with Terps football coach Mike Loxley here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Of course, you can give Coach Loxley a follow at Coach Lox, L-O-C-K-S. Big game tomorrow night, man. Friday night, Northern Illinois coming to town. Weather's supposed to be perfect. College Park should be bumping. Coach, I did want to say, you know, I follow you on Twitter. I know this is a rough week for you. You lost your son. I believe it was a few years ago. Yesterday was the anniversary. What are we, 8 years? 8 years gone now. And just know that me and B are thinking of you, and we're both fathers, and how tough that must be to persevere.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you guys. You guys are like family to me from the time I did some of the pregame stuff. And, you know, this time of year is always tough for my family because, you know, the circle of life isn't built for parents to bury children. And, you know, coaches, kids, as anybody know, for me, I have an affinity for coaches, kids. I've had a bunch of them on my team because I saw what coaching, when, you know, a dad takes care of everybody else's kids, it has an effect on your own. And, you know, Miko, I appreciate people keeping his name alive, and to me, that's what it's all about. You know, you don't get over it. You learn to get through it. It's very motivating because of the tragedy. It's really made me more intentional with what I do with the players in my program, and definitely appreciate you guys having us in your thoughts, man.
Definitely. Absolutely, Lox. I also, we had Boomer Esiason, a very proud Terp, on the show about an hour ago. We did mostly an NFL preview, but I did ask Boomer about Malik, and he said he watched it. He was really impressed, and he thinks Malik might already be the best athlete.
The most athletic quarterback ever.
At Maryland. How about that praise?
Wow.
Don't okay, tell Malik,
one,
I guess.
One game. Let's go.
Folks are excited, Lox. We are definitely excited, yeah. And we'll be watching tomorrow night. I hope that stadium is packed and you get to enjoy yourself.
I hope so, too. But either way, we're going to go out and do our best to put a product on the field that people are going to want to come see. So come on over to Terpsville. Check us out. I know we got a lot of seats available. We're excited about the direction, and we feel like we've got a really good team that'll do some special things this year.
Go check out the Terps at College Park. If you're watching on TV, it's on Big Ten Network. Thank you, Lox. Appreciate you making time, bud.
All right, fellas. Talk to y'all soon.
All right, man.
All right. Mike Loxley, head coach of the Maryland Terrapins football program, off to a 1-0 start. Really exciting young quarterback. Malik Washington could have gone anywhere in the country, anywhere, and he chose to play for Lox right
Stay home.
DMV made. I'm excited to watch Malik this season, and I'll definitely be watching tomorrow night. Give Lox a follow at Coach Lox. Nobody go anywhere. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley.
Hey, it's Brian Mitchell here. FanDuel is making week one even bigger with a chance to win a share of $2 million in bonus bets every game day. That's right, $2 million. Here's how it works. Opt in and place an anytime TD bet on any week one NFL game, including tonight's matchup, using both profit boosts and using your profit boost. And if your player, the player that you pick scores either the first or the last touchdown of the game, you'll earn a share of $2 million in bonus bets. First touchdown, you're in. Last touchdown, you're in. Both even better. It's just one more reason to bet on the NFL with FanDuel. So whether you've got a feeling about the opening drive or you're banking on a clutch finish, now's the time to get in on the game. Visit FanDuel.com/Brian to download the app today and get started. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. FanDuel Sportsbook is the official partner of 106.7 The Fan. You have to be 21 years or older and present in Virginia. Opt in. Must apply profit boost token on select market. Prize pool to be split equally among all eligible participants who made the correct first or last touchdown pick. Bonus issued as a non-withdrawable bonus bet, which expires 21 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Toby, you ever eat ecstasy?
No.
Glad we cleared that up. It is a Scotty's Vodka Red Bull Friday on B. Mitch and Finley.
Were you thinking I had?
No. Vodka Red Bull Friday is powered by Scotty's Handcrafted Vodka. Loved throughout the DMV and now available. You can buy it everywhere in Maryland, but now you can buy it in Virginia. Toby, you don't drink much vodka, but when you do, what do you prefer?
Scotty's.
That's a boy. B. Mitch Finley, Triple A poll of the day. Which team impressed you more last night, the Cowboys or the Eagles?
Cowboys, probably. Eagles were kind of underwhelming, if anything. The Cowboys had such low expectations, they could do anything. If they could just walk down the field, it would have been impressive. There were such low expectations for them. I thought they were impressive on offense.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought, especially in the first half, that weather delay just screwed up that whole game.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, and there was almost, you know, a full quarter played before that in the third quarter, but still, there wasn't a whole lot going on in that second half overall. But, I mean, Dak looked good. CD looked good aside from dropping some balls. Like, he was open.
All right.
I don't know. Cowboys offense looked okay.
B. Mitch Finley, AAA poll of the day is brought to you by AAA. Level up with the new AAA Commanders MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, plus exclusive experiences, discounts, and tickets. If you're already a AAA member, upgrade for free or join today at AAA.com/Commanders. All right. Phone lines are open, 800-636-1067. And for the last hour of the show, it's just going to be the boys talking ball. There's nothing better. Nothing better than the boys talking ball. Seriously, it's like one of my favorite pastimes. It's
probably,
probably why I have this job. Give me one key to a burgundy and gold victory on Sunday, Tobo.
I mean, we've talked about it all day, from guests to alluding to it. Got to keep Jaden upright. Give him some time. And I don't trust, I know Tiki was talking about Paulson Adebo. He's coming off a broken femur, JP. He might look impressive so far, but, you know, he was good with the Saints. He wasn't great. That's your number one corner. Deontay Banks is still a question mark. Drew Phillips. I think they can take advantage in the passing game because I actually think that Terry is going to start reasonably well for missing as much time as he did. If they can stop that pass rush or at least neutralize it a little bit, and who's to say that they're not going to blitz like the Dallas did last night and not keep their integrity and let Jaden outside the pocket. But if they can keep him upright, I think Jaden's going to have a field day.
I think Jaden is going to be so flipping good. Yes, the Giants have invested a lot in the pass rush. We had Bob Papa on yesterday, who calls Giants games and has been close to the Giants organization for 30, 40 years. And he said, you know, it looks like this, but I remember when Washington had the four first-rounders on their D-line, and they were supposed to be dominant,
yeah.
Right? Allen, Payne, Sweat, Young, and they weren't dominant. They were good. They were good flashes for sure. I just think Tunsil's really good. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I understand it's a division game. We watched the division game last night. These things tend to be tight. I think Jaden is so ready to be great. And I've watched just about every throw this summer. I just think he's so dialed. And, yeah, you got to protect him. But I think he'll also protect himself.
Yeah.
And his ability to make plays when they're not there. I thought, forgive me, I can't remember if it was DQ or if it was Cliff, but somebody got asked about, like, hey, you know, it's really hard to stay so successful on fourth down. It was DQ. And he owned it. He's like, yeah, we know that it's the level of success we had on fourth down last year is hard to do. But we try to consider a few different things. We want to really know where our kicker's good from, so we know in our minds in advance where we're going for it, and that can impact our third down play calls. So it's not willy-nilly. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's not Riverboat Ron going with his gut, right? We've heard the story 1,000 times. It is extremely data-based when they're going for it on fourth down. And so DQ said, we got to know where our kicker's comfortable. We got to know where we're going to go for it. And sure, you know, there could be some regression, but we also got Jaden. And,
yeah.
And I keep going back to that
100%.
Because I think it's a difference.
It's kind of crazy, and it's going to sound crazy when I say this, but hear me out. It almost feels like Commanders fans, they love Jaden so much, but they're almost underrating him going into this year, JP. It's almost like they think he's special, but they're like, oh, I'm nervous the offense could start slow or this and that. If you need to feel better about Sunday, if for whatever reason you're a little uneasy, go watch Jaden Daniels' highlights. That guy's going to be fine. Like, that dude is already one of the most special quarterbacks in the league. And so no matter what matchup you step into, you feel good about it. You've got the better quarterback, with the exception of maybe if you're facing Lamar or Josh Allen or Mahomes or Burrow, and that's about it. So stepping into Sunday's game, not saying it's going to be a cakewalk, but you're stepping in with a quarterback that is hands down the best player on the field. And when you've got that, you've got the advantage in any matchup. So I'm not worried going into Sunday. Not saying they're going to win definitively, but I'm not that worried going into Sunday because you've got a star. And the thing that I've said throughout the offseason, he's shown on the field that he's a special player. But you just heard from us talking with Jory Epstein. The thing that I bet on with Jaden isn't necessarily the ability on the field.
The work.
It's the guy.
It's the prep.
I can bet on Jaden Daniels putting in the necessary work to be ready to go. And so with that, I'm not that nervous about Sunday because I just have to watch one Jaden Daniels throw. I mean, the uneasiness of the Terry McLaurin situation, JP, going all throughout training camp and all these things. I'd walk out to camp and watch Jaden throw one ball. I'm like, you know what? Even if things go south, it's okay. They've got five.
Dude, Tischler and I did this on the Beltway Football Show yesterday. Like, we were doing this game breakdown, and I really believe the Giants' D-line is their strength, right?
Yeah.
I get that. I think Washington's O-line now is a strength. Like, acquiring Laramie Tunsil is a really big deal. And then you draft a first-rounder that's going to play right tackle for you. Allegretti or Wiley? I don't know. We'll find out. I kind of think they're leaning Allegretti. We'll find out Sunday. Brandon Coleman showed real guts last year playing left tackle as a rookie. And there was good and there was bad. But I think Brandon Coleman at guard could be really good. Biotis is really good. Like, I acknowledge every game in the NFL is a threat. Teams can lose whenever.
Yeah.
Like, you can old takes exposed me here if you want to. Like, obviously, New York is a threat. They're a good football team. They have good players. Like, it's the NFL. If you could predict the NFL week to week, you'd be a very rich person. You can't. But all that said, I always circle back to Jaden. Like, all roads lead to Jaden. You know what I mean? And what Tischer and I got into it yesterday is like, you know, we were all really concerned about the Terry thing. I wasn't. I always thought they'd get the Terry deal done. And we didn't waver from that on this program. And I'm not concerned about Terry, like, not being there long enough. If you are, you're entitled to it. Like, I can understand the logic if that's a concern, but it's not a concern for me. Now, Malik Nabers is a concern.
Yeah.
Dexter Lawrence, right? Like,
there's definitely questions about the team, but this is what frustrated me with, you know, the big article this offseason about how lucky the Commanders were. How lucky is it when Patrick Mahomes has the ball last and his team wins? Is that lucky? Because I don't think that's lucky. I think that's having one of the best quarterbacks in the league and him going out there and doing his thing. How many times last year was it Jaden Daniels had the ball last and his football team won? That's not luck. That's having the better quarterback. That's what happens in the NFL.
They practice it. People, I think, really underestimate the impact hiring a dude like Dave Gardy made. Dave Gardy worked for the NFL for decades and was in charge of operations, like game operations, like how the rules work, how the clock works. Then you bring that dude onto your staff to help you with the clock at the end. You know how, like, so many coaches bungle that stuff. Washington, forget end of game. Go back and check. Maybe ChatGPT could do this. I don't really know how to use ChatGPT, but that's a popular thing to say. I'd love to know how many points the Commanders stole at the end of halves when they had 48 seconds and they were able to get three. Like, those little things that they coach and practice make a huge difference at the end result. And I've planted a flag. People have to get comfortable with expectations. PFT commenter said it this morning. Like, it's weird feeling expectations. You should have them.
Yeah.
I think this is a good football team.
Yeah, it's a privilege to have those, right? And not to say that they're going to win 12 games or they're going to win 10 games. We don't know. Like you said, you roll the ball out and see what happens. Roll the helmets out and see what happens. But you feel as confident as possible because the coaching staff is competent, can make adjustments, can make a game plan that works. You've got the better quarterback in just about every matchup you're going to step into. And you've got a team that feels like it's going to be prepared. And by the way, a team that went 12-5 and went to the NFC Championship last year is probably better on paper this year. So you're not guaranteed anything, but everything possible that they could do to make sure that they're ready to roll and that they can repeat what they did last year and take a step forward, I think they've done it.
Dude, and I'm also just done with, like, the regression sophomore slump conversation. Like, the games are here. The games are what matter. They go 10-7 and win the wild card game. Like, is that bad? You know
no,
what I mean?
No.
Like, to me, it's make the playoffs, try to win the division. And then the win total count is every year in the NFL, every season is a living, breathing organism that shifts and grows and shrinks and moves throughout a 17-game, 18-week marathon of a meat grinder. So, like, trying to draw too much from last year is just folly.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not particularly relevant, honestly. It does the ass-kicking of the Browns in week 6 matter?
No.
No. So, like, stop trying to draw from that. And what B always says, the windshield's way bigger than the rear view. Like, we're on to Cincinnati, man. It's week 1. It's the boys talking ball.
Yeah, 100%. I think, too, we've talked about how difficult the schedule is this year compared to last year. I think that the nuance that maybe we haven't done a good enough job of talking about with it, JP, is it is a more difficult schedule in the sense that there's no cupcakes. Like last year, there were a couple of games where you could have brought your C-level game and probably won. And in some cases, they did. Like the Saints in the second half, they win that game, right? There's no real cupcakes, aside from maybe if you don't believe in the Raiders or a couple of games here or there. But I think they're the better team in a majority of their games. So would it be crazy to see them get to 11 wins, 12 wins again?
No.
No.
I don't think you should expect them to fall back.
Correct.
Now, injuries happen that, like, what are expectations for the Bengals if Burrow gets hurt? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's football.
Injuries happen, it's football. But outside of that, my expectations are this is a good team. They're going to play good football, and they're going to contend.
100%.
And that could be whatever numerical value you want to assign it. I just don't care.
Yeah, 100%. You got to go out there and win football games. And I think it's right to have expectations for this team. And I think they have expectations. So I'm excited for Sunday to kick it off. Excited to see what the guys look like.
Hell yeah. John is in Aldi. Johnny, it's the Boys Talking Football. What's up?
What's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call. You guys do a great job covering the team, and it's a pleasure listening to you guys every day.
Thanks, dude.
I'm just so excited, man, for this weekend, for this new season to start. My kids are your young kids, 10, 12, and, you know, like, they're finally able to get into it and actually have a competent, good team to, like, root for. So, oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. Looking forward to seeing our new playmakers out there, Debo and our – looking to see how our offensive line does against that strong defensive front that Giants have. I think we'll do well. I think our guys are ready with Tunsil and John Connerly on the other end. So, like, as long as we win that battle in the trenches, I think we have a great chance of winning this weekend, and I'm super excited about it. So let's go, Commanders.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate the call, John.
I'm excited to see Connerly in his debut. Interested to see what the Giants are going to do, throwing different guys at him. But I've been impressed by some things that I've seen. I think there's some places he needs to grow. But you're right. I think that offensive line is now a strength of this team, and it hasn't been the case in quite some time.
Should we dial this in? Predictions?
Sure.
Confidence level?
Sure.
I think you and I feel... Listen, my confidence is not guaranteeing victory, right? But I think they've got a good team. I think they're going to be ready to play. And assuming all things fire correctly, they win the game.
Correct.
So I would say I'm confident.
Yeah, very confident.
NFC's games are tricky, man. Like, I get all the stuff. They barely beat the Giants twice last year. I get it.
Well, and people that are worried that they're maybe going to start slow, I can understand that because of the various factors that they can point out. And also look at last night's game when both offenses didn't play a ton in preseason and both of them just marched right up and down the field in the first half. And we're firing all cylinders right away. So, yeah, there's some weird things that can happen, but I feel pretty confident they're going to step out there and be ready to roll week one. And if they play their best football and they play to their standard, they're going to win the game against the Giants.
White Brian, you're a Giants fan. You're here sometimes, and you listen to us talk about the Burgundy and Gold with some frequency. You're aware of last season. You're aware of this season. You're aware of the change from Tommy DeVito to Russ Wilson. You're aware of the addition of Abdul Carter. You're aware of the addition of Debo Samuel. How are you feeling going into this game?
I'm feeling good in terms of I think the Giants have something to prove. I think that D-line's really good, and it's going to be a very competitive game. The issue arises when it's a close game and number five on the Commanders has the ball to win the game.
So your confidence level as a Giants fan of a Giants victory?
3.5. Only way they win is if they are up double digits in the fourth.
3.5 out of 4, 3.5 out of 10, 3.5 on what scale, sir?
3.5 out of 10.
Okay.
Okay.
Professor Landini, you are here regularly.
That is correct.
Landfill, of all the people, Landfill is the most dependable.
Yes.
Remarkable that's true.
I mean, that tells you what the scene is like on the B. Mitch and Finley program. Professor Mulligatawny.
That's correct.
Confidence level going into Commanders Giants?
Extremely high. I have complete confidence in Jaden Daniels. I'm like, I'm just going to say 10. Ooh. out of 10.
Out of 10.
Yeah. They're getting this done. I have zero faith in Russell Wilson anymore. He's on, what, his fourth team in 4 years. That's the sign of a guy who's not good anymore.
It's also, he's got to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Like, at some point you're a pain in the ass, dude.
Giants ain't getting it done. Commanders win.
Landfill's a 10 out of 10.
I love that.
Toby tells us how high he goes when we return. It's B. Mitch and Finley.